It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Phrase in Washington, D.C. today, all this week. It's worse than Watergate. That has become the Washington cliche for the inescapable situation when it comes to the Durham report. As you remember, Watergate is, you know, that brought about a lot of change on how presidents were held accountable, you know? And that was prior to the downfall of Richard Nixon, and then what he did got him into some trouble. And his sentiment at the time was, if a president does it, it's not illegal. Which, to some extent, giving you an informal understanding of the presidency, as crazy as it sounds, it's totally outrageous by, you know, today's contemporary ears. But, to get back on track, the Durham report brings up a lot of questions about what do we do now? And how is empowering the FBI and unelected deep state bureaucrats to hold a president accountable, how's that working out for everybody, huh? That's something that the FBI is going to have to deal with now or with the next president. And I think if they deal with the next president, it ain't going to be pretty, if you know what I mean. But there are bills that are, you know, getting a lot of grief on Capitol Hill from both sides. One in particular has to do with AM radios and cars. Now, there is a bipartisan group that's come together to make this, yes, every single car in the country has to have an AM radio. Lawmakers in Capitol Hill are pushing to keep AM radios in the nation's cars. And again, it's a bipartisan group of Republicans and Democrats. Why? Why? The obvious reason there should be an AM radio in every car, and it's very obvious, it has to do with safety, public safety concerns. And the preservation of an AM radio in each car, you know, is going to make these congressmen sleep a little better each night, and I'm going to be sleeping better, too. You know, the fact that I'm on AM radio has a lot to do with it, but at the same time, you can always find what you need on AM radio in any time of a disaster. You know, FM does a great job, too. That's why we're on both here at this program. But I think this is something that has to stay. I want to get your opinion on this later. You know, should every car have an AM radio? That may sound a little silly, especially along generational lines. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a generational separation on this, but yeah, getting to the debt ceiling wars. And let me tell you, you know, if we are to fault, it's expected to be default, expected to be far worse than a government shutdown. And I'm going to tell you today why. Even though we have defaulted four times in the last 30 years, we got that information from Dr. Penbera. And also being whispered today on Capitol Hill is Dianne Feinstein's health. Her complications from shingles or whatever was much more severe than previously disclosed. The sugars, you know, had also triggered encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain. I've been down that road. It's not fun. You hallucinate, it's bad. Also, as you heard in the news, Ramsey-Hunt syndrome is also a player in her health, which causes facial paralysis. And she's having problems with her memory, too, as you are well aware, which seems to be very vogue on Capitol Hill right now. Two of our most powerful Democratic leaders having big problems with their memories. And this has brought about another large cry from the rank and file for her to resign. And that's just growing and growing. The people saying, get out of there after the revelation of the brain infection. Here in California, as we seek $800 million in reparations for the black population that can directly prove, ascendancy from slavery, one of the squad members, Cori Bush, is calling for a federal atonement of $14 trillion. Now, in arguing that, who's going to pay for that? You know who's going to pay for that. Where's the trillion going to come from? $14 trillion. And that word trillion, it's now delivered almost daily in Washington in a very casual and cavalier tone as saying, you know, a million or a billion. It doesn't have the impact that it used to. But trillion, what's another trillion? No big deal. Yeah. Interesting news in the Biden campaign. This is a little complicated, but, you know, leave it to them to mess it up for the incumbent. Democrats have been scrambling to avoid a potential embarrassment for the president in New Hampshire in 2024. The DNC has improved a calendar that gave the state slot to South Carolina that puts New Hampshire in a shared second slot on the primary calendar with Nevada. Now, yeah, I'll tell you what that all means, but what it does mean, it may keep Biden's name off of the ballot in New Hampshire. And that is almost unforgivable. But that's nothing that the Biden administration did. That's all at the hands of the DNC, not keeping it together. Sounds like, you know, The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. And it also appears that in Washington, there's a key nominee to a particular position in the Biden administration that wants to oversee all automobile standards. And in doing that, this lady wants to make consumers pay full cost for everything associated with climate change. Now, this brilliant nominee, her name is Ann Carlson, is the acting administrator of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Say that 10 times in a row. And, you know, she doesn't take into consideration worldwide pollution, which we are also a victim of, the air standards, of which there are none in China and India, belching out much more crap into the air than we ever could here in the United States. We are also the beneficiaries of that stuff, too, that comes from those two countries. So are we going to be made to pay for that as well? A decent question. New Jersey Governor, former Chris Christie, will announce he's running for the presidency 2024, though good old White House candidacy in the coming days. You know, he really doesn't stand a chance, but his campaign is now focusing on New Hampshire. And who supports him? Who's giving him money? So far, we know of Steve Cohen, who owns the New York Mets. He's dumped a pile on him. So, I mean, he's got some money, but does he have the chances? He used to work for Donald Trump. Now he's going to take on Donald Trump. Good luck. And the Biden foreign policy moves on. Military officials are now walking back claims of a recent drone strike in Syria that they say killed a top al-Qaeda terrorist, when in fact they killed a bricklayer, a father of 10, who was out tending to his sheep. The guy was believed to be a senior al-Qaeda leader, but now they are certain they goofed. This guy was a bricklaying sheep herder, 56 years old, Latfi Hassan Misto, a father of 10. And that's ugly. How do you make that mistake? And let me tell you, the witnesses are really coming forward in the Daniel Penny case, the young Marine vet who was trying to contain an individual on the subway in New York and, you know, this guy wound up dying for whatever reason. And one of the witnesses is 60 years old. And he was talking about Jordan Neely, who had a crime record as long as both of my arms, and he's mentally unstable. And a lot of people were terrified of him on the New York Underground. But, you know, in the beginning, you remember Penny was let go by the cops, and then there was so much noise about something needs to happen. Alvin Bragg threw that second-degree manslaughter charge on him. But this witness, as many have said, a couple, said they felt threatened. This guy was threatening everybody. He was coming forward, getting in their faces and all that. And at the same time, it seems that this witness heard, and also the former Marine heard, Jordan Neely say, "I don't care if I have to kill, I will." And that's when Daniel Penny stepped into action. And all indications are that he heard the same thing that this 60-year-old witness heard. And if you're planning a trip to the Big Apple, where all of that's taking place, let me tell you that half of the hotel rooms in New York City are filled with newly arrived illegal aliens. Wonderful. And according to the words of Eric Adams, we're going to continue to be a sanctuary state, but how's that working out for you? New Yorkers are going to be settling the bill on this one, $75 million per annum to take care of the illegal aliens in one particular hotel, and that's Manhattan's iconic Roosevelt Hotel. $75 million. And in New York, we also have a photo agency. Yeah, responding to the near catastrophic car chase, as it's been called, and that whole narrative by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. It was apparent to him that the photographers had no intention of causing any distress or harm. The claims of the former prince and his wife are being debunked. And a statement to the media from this particular company, which is called Backgrid USA, says they value transparency and ethics in journalism, which include providing fair and factual responses to claims when it comes to allegations and those of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. And her mother was also in the car as it was pursued, they say, aggressively by paparazzi. And this is a long statement, but, you know, to shorten it up right now, and I'll give you the whole statement later. Their conclusion was, there was no catastrophic chase. And there's a little more to this that as we travel along, you're going to find interesting. Have you seen Martha Stewart on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine in the swimsuit, making her the oldest model to grace the cover? Now everybody is screaming and yelling that she had to go under the knife. She had all kinds of plastic surgery to do that. Martha's hit back hard and said, absolutely not. She's never gone under the knife. She even took time to explain why she looks so good for her age. And it makes sense to me, you know? And the good old California pot industry is facing what experts are saying is an extinction event. These businesses are going out of business in huge numbers. They're missing tax payments. Most of them are like $1 million in debt. This has not worked out well. 13% of the pot stores in the state failed to make any tax payment to the government on May the 1st. Now they're facing a 50% penalty on the taxes that they didn't pay. It's not 15, that's 50. And 50% of the penalties there, I mean, that's going to put the death blow to a lot of these stores that are going down. So not good for the pot industry in California. I don't know that anybody's shocked by that, because the retail pot is much more expensive than the underground pot. And this whole thing was to get the underground dealer out of business. But instead, everybody still flocks to the underground dealer because he's cheaper. There's no quality control, but who cares? Right? Right. Welcome to a Friday on the Appleton Program with a lot to do.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
My friends, we have a very cool, sweet deal that went on sale this morning at 9 o'clock. I have no idea how many we have left, but this is probably not for everybody, but I love it. I've been telling you about it all week. I used to do this all the time. You're going to be able to save half off on whitewater rafting on the Kings River. And when the Kings is as swollen as it is now, this is a gas. Back in the 70s and 80s, I used to do this like every other weekend with a company called Kings River Expeditions. Anyway, this is on sale now, and I highly recommend it if you're looking for something very different to do. It's at kmjnow.com. Click the Sweet Deal tab and have fun and invite me. I literally have not done this probably for about 28 years, you know? It's been a while. But very vivid memories. All of our friends would get together, and I loved it, man. I loved it. I was always the leader of the pack. It was always me. Let's go rafting. Let's go rafting. Oh, Ray wants to go rafting again. Yes, he does. Check it out. Check this out. Reparations. I tell you, this has become the fad. Cori Bush, a member of the so-called squad, introduced legislation the day before yesterday that would provide federal reparations for black Americans. The draft of the resolution claims the United States has a moral and legal obligation to provide reparations for the enslavement of Africans and its lasting harm to the lives of millions of black people in this country. And the resolution therefore calls for $14 trillion to be distributed to African blacks, American blacks, in an effort to close the racial wealth gap. But will it? The only way we can get closer to reparations is if we start putting together those bills that speak to it and are clear about what reparations could look like, says Corey. The packages have been introduced in Congress in the past. I think it was John Conyers back in the late 80s. Sheila Jackson Lee passed this stuff, but it never got through both houses and it never got signed. So it's nothing new. But the political path forward for Cori Bush's resolution also remains very murky. You know, during the 2020 Democratic primary election, the Post asked the candidates if they thought a federal government should pay reparations to the descendants of enslaved people. All of the contenders, including Joe Biden, said they supported a comprehensive study of the issue, but they would never commit to a payment. Now, public opinion polls have shown that a number of Americans who do support reparations for black Americans has grown significantly over the last 20 years. But still, overall, in terms of polling, the idea remains broadly unpopular. And you would be surprised that the majority of blacks, you know, in the polling are not in favor of this. Kings River sold out. How about that? I knew you'd do it. You guys bought them all. I'm going to have so much fun. So much fun. In the 2021 post, it found that just 28% of Americans support reparations. 65% oppose paying cash reparations to descendants. 46% of the Democrats favor the idea. 46, that's not a majority. 92% of the Americans oppose it. I mean, Republicans oppose it. Two-thirds of black respondents say they support the idea, but it's got to have a caveat. And, you know, a lot of caveats. They want to make sure within the African-American community, those that are getting the money are the true descendants of African slaves. And I don't know how they go about doing that, you know. But there's a professor of public policy at Duke University. There's all kinds of professors shouting out on this. They've also consulted on Bush's resolution, and they called the bill a positive movement forward. But again, there's never any, where are we going to get the money? That's the punchline. There's never any answer there where the money is going to come from other than taxes. You know, and we've got the governor here in our state saying that he would support a cash payment of reparations in his state, as the task force recommended. But to what degree, how much, and what proof do they need? So, me for one, I don't think this is ever going to happen. It's fun to talk about. It's fun to debate. But I don't know how you're going to find the money for it. And I don't know how individuals are going to prove they're descendants of slaves. You know, and a lot of people say that are arguing this on television, African-Americans, well, just look at my skin. Well, that's not always the proof that's needed. Now, the reparations panel here in California, according to many experts, is a disaster. And these experts are recommending that black Americans should reject it. You know, African-American citizens in the state of California should look at it and say, this is not right. Now, this task force in California was supposed to be kind of a no-lose political stunt to make Gavin Newsom's credentials as he angles forward to higher office something really impressive and important. Instead, it's exposing the inherent absurdity of the entire concept of reparations and turning it into a major political liability for Newsom. And the idea, of course, in the beginning was simple. The task force would deliberate, generating the regular headlines, and then eventually propose something. Either the proposal would be feasible, in which case black Californians would get some nominal amount of money, and Newsom could claim a win, or it would be outlandish, in which case legislators would balk, and Newsom would claim that he'd done everything in his power to correct historical injustices here in what was a free state upon our admission to the Union in 1850. Come on. Either way, whenever Newsom decided to throw his hat into the ring for the Democratic presidential nomination, which he says he's not doing now, he would use the reparations task force to campaign hard for the black vote. That's what this is all about. This was about Newsom's run for the presidency, and now there's not going to be one. And this noise of paying reparations is, according to the left, a very influential topic for Democratic presidential primaries, as Joe Biden can attest to a certain degree, I suppose, since he's in favor of some kind of a payment, at least studying it. But it now appears that there was a third possibility that Newsom had not foreseen, and that is the reparations task force started making proposals that featured mind-boggling large numbers. Most recently, the task force came up with reparations of about $1.2 million per person. So the total price tag for the plan is an estimated $800 billion, which is on par with what the entire country spends on national defense. You aware of that? That's what we spend on national defense thereabouts. We're already facing a $22.5 billion deficit in the budget. There's no leeway to raise taxes on a populace that's already fleeing the state to go to the low-tax states like Texas and Florida. Even under the best circumstances, $800 billion is orders of magnitude much more than the state could possibly afford. So the governor's stuck. He couldn't let people think he was actually backing such an outrageous scheme because it would have destroyed whatever credibility he has left as a serious leader. But at the same time, the reparations task force is his baby. So he can't be exactly honest, can he? He had to make all of these noncommittal noises and then suggest that perhaps the task force could come up with another idea that wasn't so ridiculous, so flamboyant. And the task force let him down again, this time with a proposal to give the state the power to micromanage municipal real estate ordinances. And in a nutshell, the state would be able to wield veto power over local ordinances based upon what bureaucrats believe would best promote diversity. Now, that one gets real complicated, and I don't even want to get into it. But this is a colossally bad idea that would create far more problems than it solves. Instead of, I mean, to my way of thinking, all right, instead of letting local citizens and their elected officials make decisions that would directly impact their lives, what it does, it gives power over to unelected bureaucrats in Sacramento who would make those decisions based on not what might be best for local residents, but on what they believe is necessary to correct a historical injustice that the state of California had nothing to do with. I mean, realistically, how do you price your grandfather, for example, having to live in a less desirable area because of redlining? How, you know, 40 or 50 years ago after the fact, can you qualify the economic impact of somebody going to prison for a crime that they maybe have not, you know, committed because their skin was a different color? You know, Newsom's task force tried to do just to that, but they came up with a figure that nobody in their right mind could possibly take seriously. Just like Cori Bush, $14 trillion for national reparations. You can't take that seriously. So if we're going to have a serious conversation about reparations, we've got to have a serious one with a number that works. Or walk away from it, because I don't think we can ever find a serious
one. The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Free.
KMJNow.com.
Cash Patel, who was on with us earlier this week, he joined us in the 1 o'clock hour on Monday, former member of the Trump administration. He was with the National Security Council. A very interesting guy, neat guy. I've gotten to know him pretty well, and I like him a lot. He's going to be speaking at this event tomorrow out in Reedley, at the Reedley Community Center, Community Hall, whatever it's called. I'll give you all information here very soon, as I've done, I think, dutifully every day this week. But the original venue had to be stricken because of the swelling of the Kings River out there. But Cash Patel in town tomorrow here in the Valley. Speaking of the swelling of the river, once again, the sweet deal that went on sale this morning at Whitewater Rafting Trips with Kings River Expeditions is sold out. Sold out. I'm so glad you took me up on this one, because you're going to have a ball. You're going to have a ball. Report back and tell me if I'm wrong, all right? Please? Mm-hmm. I'm sure it hasn't changed in 20 or 30 years. And the Cash Patel segment is, you know, KMJNow.com on the podcast. It's there. He was on fire. On fire. Something that's not on fire and sinking like a rock. California's pot industry on the verge of an extinction event. Not my words. The pot shops are going out of business in big numbers, and almost all of them are missing their tax payments and sinking under, you know, millions of dollars in debt. Debt problems have plagued this industry, I'm told, for years. It's a 2022 report estimating that the industry was collectively sitting on over $600 million in collective debt. But a change in the tax law that took effect this year has stakeholders worried that the mounting debt bubble is finally going to become fatal. There's a San Francisco politician, at least I think it was the Bay Area, introduced a law this year in the state legislature that would crack down on pot businesses if they don't pay the debts. State law recently shifted the burden for paying for cannabis excise taxes from the distributors, oops, to the retailers, ouch, that hurts, with the first tax payments due on May the 1st. Now, retailers have historically always had trouble paying their bills. I mean, it appears that in many shops, they lack the cash to pay their state excise tax, especially in this industry. Over 13% of this state's retailers, and that's going to be like just under 300 shops, have failed. They did not make any payment by May the 1st. And that's according to the California Department of Tax and Fee Administration. And I'm sure they don't lie. But those businesses are now facing a 50% penalty on taxes that they owe. And that means if they can't pay that first one and now it's going to go up by 50%. This is going to be the death blow to a number of other shops. And the number of shops, you know, affected could climb higher and higher and higher. The state agency said it's still processing the 581 tax returns, which, you know, includes retailers that even failed to pay at one point. They're starting to dribble in. There's a cannabis attorney at a firm in L.A. telling the media that she expects the debt problems to shut down most of the shops in California. Wow. Quote, there's a debt bubble that's been building over the last few years, and it's very close to bursting. She says, I do anticipate a lot of retailers going out of business this year, just like we saw a lot of cultivators go out of business last year. There's an individual who's the owner of a company called Sunset Connect, a cannabis manufacturer in San Francisco. He said he's seen pot shops with over $500,000 in unpaid bills. And he expects the new tax structure is going to cause this extinction event for pot shops in the state. Does this really surprise anybody? I mean, it's the same one note I've been, you know, sounding off for years. This was supposed to remove the criminal element out of marijuana sales in California. It's done nothing to do that, because with all the taxes that have been levied, you know, on the purchase of pot, it's still cheaper to go to your local dealer down on the corner. Now, the state's argument against that is, well, there's no quality control like we impose on the dealers. When you go with a dealer, you know you're getting something that's safe, allegedly, you know, pure, not mixed with anything. It's fine. It's wonderful. But that hasn't worked. That argument has not worked. It's all about money. It's the money, honey. It's economics every single time. I don't care what the product is. So instead, the guy that's working underground, or the gal selling the stuff, is doing rather well, even in the medical marijuana business. So, legal pot shops in California, an obvious monetary mistake. And I don't know that the state is going to be changing any of their laws to suit the predicament that these shops are in. They do. You're going to have every other retailer, every other mom and pop that's hurting, screaming for the same thing and equal treatment. I don't think even the Democratic majority, the supermajority, does not want to deal with that. Very quickly, crazy story out of our wonderful state with origins in Cheyenne, Wyoming. A rail shipment carrying, this is not good, 60,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate used as fertilizers, but also as explosives, is missing 60,000 pounds from a rail shipment that was due to arrive in the state, our state, this week from Wyoming. They have no idea where this train is. This is a rail car loaded with 30 tons of the chemical, leaving Cheyenne on April the 12th. The car was found to be empty after arriving 2 weeks later at a stop in the Mojave Desert, but as I just mentioned, they don't know where the product is. According to a short incident report, the explosives firm made, you know, for the shipment, they have no clue. The company, Dyna Nobel, made the report on May the 10th to the Federal National Response Center. The report also appeared last week in the NRC database of California incidents managed by the State Office of Emergency Services. Dyna Nobel says it believes the material, transported in pellet form in a covered hopper car similar to those to use to haul coal, it fell from the car on the way to a rail siding about 30 miles from a town in Mojave in eastern Kern County. How could 60,000 pounds fall out of a car? A rail car, how do you do that? The laws of physics, a gravity reverse? Did they hit a weird spot in the desert where, you know, spacemen have landed previously and there's no gravity or something? Ammonium nitrate was the explosive, you remember, used in the bomb to blow up Oklahoma City in that domestic terror attack in 1995. It's also that substance that caused a very deadly explosion in a warehouse in the port of Beirut, Lebanon in 2020. That one was ugly. Now, for some reason, investigators in the government are saying foul play is not a suspect here. But the loss of this hazardous chemical is just, it's a problem, and it's the latest rail problem in the past several months. In February, there was a train carrying toxic chemicals. It derailed in Palestine, Ohio. You know that. I mean, that eventually led to a massive explosion, spread potentially hazardous substances to the surrounding community. They're still suffering from the aftermath of that. And the official statement from the railroad company says the rail car was sealed when it left Cheyenne. And the seals were still intact when it arrived at the spot in Mojave. And the initial assessment is that a leak through the bottom gate of the rail car must have developed in transit, and they just left like a little trail of ammonium sulfate from Wyoming to California. Even that's a danger. So, you know, there's a Federal Railway Administration representative who says the investigation points to one of the hopper car gates not being properly closed. So maybe this is it. Or that was, you know, the entry port of anyone looking to steal the load of explosive material could have gotten through that gate that wasn't properly closed. But where indeed did that happen? Which stop did that happen? No answers. No answers. Very quick, let's do this, and I have to go to a break. Jim, you're on KMJ. Talk to me.
Hey, exactly what they said has occurred. We used to, when I worked at another company, we used to get rail cars with fertilizer. They're sealed with those little wire seals, but if a door on the bottom, and they're V'd almost like almond hoppers, but it's a lot larger. Sometimes there's three at the bottom.
Okay.
And you put a conveyor belt underneath it, and, you know, the way they set them up at the unloading place, and you just put them inside your containers or your building or whatever. If one of those seal, not the seal, but if one of the doors comes loose, and you, exactly what they said, it's going to trail all the way that 1,000 miles or whatever. And, I mean, nobody's going to be able to collect it. It's not going to be a danger per se. Only thing you're going to maybe get is a few extra weeds. But, you know, for them to be able to, somebody to steal it out of a rail car like that while it's on the run, even if it's parked on a, it's pretty difficult.
Yeah. So this is feasible to you. I mean, it makes sense to me that something like that can happen, leaving a little trail, like a trail of crackers, you know, with Hansel and Gretel, you know, going to grandma's house or wherever the hell they were going. But this in particular case, it's ammonium sulfate, 60,000 pounds of it. Gee, who gets to suck up the liability on that one? This is KMJ.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Right now,
the Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, KMJNow.com.
Well, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a week that goes by I don't jump on the airwaves here and tell you what a horrible place Fresno is, according to some survey, right? I mean, according to every survey out there, we suck at everything. However, U.S. News and World Report has released its list of the best places to live in the country. And we got included. What were they smoking? I mean, I'm happy to see this. Green Bay, Wisconsin came in number one of 150 most populous metro areas and the best to live in. You know, good places to live in, top places to live in, to use their word. And the rankings are based upon affordability, quality of life, desirability in the job market. Dig? And they also consider the factors such as healthcare, access to it, the cost of living, the weather. Huntsville, Alabama, Raleigh and Durham, North Carolina, Boulder, Colorado, Sarasota, Florida. Ooh, that's where Devin is. Round out this year's top five. Top five. But for the Valley, Fresno is at 146 out of 150. Hey, we'll take it. We'll take it. Visalia, one of my favorite places on the planet, is at 147. I would have thought Visalia would have beat us. Don't get mad at me. But yeah, so out of 150 top places to live in America, Fresno is 146. Visalia is 147. And again, the number one city is Green Bay. Top five, again, Huntsville, Alabama, Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, Boulder, Colorado, Sarasota, Florida. Ta-da! Now, along the same lines locally, one of our television stations took it upon themselves to find some quirky things, codes, regulations of what you can and can't do. Quirky municipal codes on the books in Fresno and Clovis. In Clovis, wearing a hat in a theater is against the law if it obstructs the view of any person. Quote, no person in any theater shall wear any hat or other headgear which shall obstruct the view of any person while a performance or other entertainment is actually in progress in such theater. Okay, well, you can file that one under common sense, too. In Clovis, it's also illegal to grow a plant known as Tribulus terrestris. Huh? No person shall plant, grow, or suffer or permit to be planted the plant known as Tribulus terrestris, commonly known as the puncture vine. And that can't happen upon real property owned or controlled by that individual. When was the last time you heard that term, puncture vine? Mommy, I ran through puncture vines and my bicycle doesn't work now. It was like once a month at my house. In the city of Fresno, there's throwing confetti on the streets is illegal. No person shall throw upon any street or upon any person on any street any flour, lime, bran, plaster, chalk, cut-up paper, paper ribbon, confetti, or other similar substance. Why would somebody throw lime on somebody? Or plaster. Or flour. I mean, this. The city of Fresno also has a section about sidewalk sweeping hours. No person shall sweep any sidewalk, stairway, or any other opening leading to the street or sidewalk within the business section of the city after the hour of 8 a.m. What happens if you get caught doing that? You get thrown in jail for 6 months? Laws. Also locally, the U.S. Postal Service, this is serious stuff, is reporting on an ongoing issue of mail theft in Fresno County. We see regular reports. We work very closely with the police department and the sheriff's office sharing information. A postal inspector has said, you know, the USPS, United States Postal Service, has a 24-hour dispatch line where you can report theft, calling on them to launch an investigation. There's even an incentive for reporting information that could lead to catching a mail thief. This has been going on a while in Fresno. It's a crime that we take very seriously. We have a standing reward of up to $10,000, and that's not something that we have to ask for. It's always there. To avoid, you know, having your mail stolen, you should take your mail to the post office. And if you're going to use a blue drop-off box, pay attention to the collection times. Try dropping your mail off closer to the pickup time. They also suggest, you know, signing up for informed delivery, put quotes around that, which sends emails of what you can expect to find in your mailbox every day. That's kind of cool. So to report mail theft or tampering with any mailbox, you can call a 24-hour line. You want to write this down? It's for kicks. Get a pen, get a paper. I'll wait. La-di-da-di-da. The number is 877-8796. It's an extra number here. I don't know why. 2455. That's the feds for you. I'll take a look at the break and make sure that that's right. Hour number two of the Appleton program coming up right after we pay our bills and do what we need to do, and I'll be right back at you. See if I can clean that phone number up a little bit, too.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show.
Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.